When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 330. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. I am once again outnumbered. We have a lot of Chris's in the podcast today. Two Chris's to just one Eric. We'll bring on the usual Chris on this show. My 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. It's going to be a good show. As always, with this guest, it's going to be great. And you already hinted at it, but I'm really looking forward to this one. It's been another good week of ball. Man, I can't believe the minor league season's almost over. It's right. Wild. I've got one more week of DSL, a couple more weeks of single A action, and then kind of staggers week by week, which sucks. It's sad. I'm kind of, in a way, ready for the season to be over, just the hustle and bustle and just like fully dive in. But yeah, it's going to be sad not to have games to go to each week, but then it'll be AFL time. So pumped about that, which before we know it, it's going to be here. So looking forward to that as well. And our guest is certainly well positioned for the AFL.
Yes, he absolutely is. That's the thing though. Even though I did the name drop with another Chris, there's so many Chris's in this prospect space. It could be a number of different Chris's, but we have one of the OGs in this industry. He is a host and analyst over at Fantasy Pros, co-owner of In This League and the Prospect One podcast, the one, the only, Mr. Chris Welsh. How's it going, bud?
What up, guys? Oh, you said other Chris. I was like, who? And then I was like, oh, blessing. But then are there others? Who are the others besides Clegg, the big three? Is there a big four?
There's got to be another.
There's got to be. There's someone that's just like, you guys are really rude. That you
I was almost named Chris. That's like a fun fact.
Oh, really?
My mother wanted to name me Christopher, so my name would be Chris Cross, but my dad shut that down super quick.
Oh, your dad's not fun. That would have been a lot of fun. Isn't that weird? We all have that story. Maybe we don't all have that. I have the same thing. I was going to be Michael. That was going to be my name. No, I don't even know the story behind it, but that was like going to be the name. And then it changed. Clegg, did you have that at all? I want to see if it's three for three.
No, not that I am aware of, at least. I think I was always supposed to be Christopher.
Okay. I was hoping it would maybe be.
I know.
I'm with you though. I'll tell you, there's this little bit of relief that starts to happen when the season comes to an end. Cause you're just like, okay, maybe I can get my bearings in. My situation is just a little bit different though, because as Complex just ended, but we over here, we have what's called the Bridge League. This is the new thing that's going on. It's essentially an instructional league here in Arizona that's just filled with draft guys, especially high school guys. And then we'll go to Instructs in September, and then we'll go to the AFL. I just got my AFL schedule, by the way. I have the schedule in hand for the Arizona Fall League. So nothing ends for me until mid-November, unfortunately. And then I get that 6-week break because then in January camps start up. But yeah, you need the time to rewind. But then there's also that sadness, especially as things start to change. And mine is, again, very different because it's like, oh, spring training's ending. And then it's, oh, minor league spring training. Oh, that's ending. And then it's Complex. Oh, that's it. So it's, for me, it's this ever evolving thing. Yeah. But I'm glad to be here with you guys. I miss you. And I'm so looking forward to the AFL to get to see you guys again and hopefully do another podcast in the stands and see if we can get foul ball number two.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to be out there a full week this year. So we'll have plenty of time before the first pitch conference. So we'll be out there that Monday. Looking forward to that. So full week of action in the AFL for us. We'll certainly look forward to seeing you there.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's coming right up. It's only what? We're August 14th. I think we fly out, what, like the 28th? So Yeah, we're talking like about 2.5 months we'll be out there. And man, it was just June, so that next 2.5 months is going to fly by, and we'll be out there in the nice Arizona weather, hopefully.
And, yeah, super nice. 110 every day, Eric. Every single day. I literally, like, the level that you sweat when you go to these games, it's, like, embarrassing. But it just, everybody's doing the same thing. But also, like, I was at the Reds yesterday, and the Reds, like, a weird complex, and you're just standing there, and I'm an early person. I get everywhere early. So, like, I'll be standing in a complex and there's nobody around. And it's actually a very weird feeling. It's a feeling that I am cool with. But if you were, like, let's say someone listening, they were fresh off and they're just like, you know what? I want to do this. Here's the cool thing about prospects, by the way. You can. You could just start going to games and complex, you can. But if you don't know what you're doing, you're just walking around what this is like authorized personnel only, and you're walking around this complex and no one's there. You feel like you're intrusive in a place, but then you're standing there and it's 110 and it's hot. And then the players start walking out and they're not sweating. And you're just like, why are you guys not sweating? Haven't you been working out? And everyone's all clean. But then it's an hour into us all being out there. Everyone's exhausted and just sweaty and just done with it. And I talked to a couple of players. I was talking to Tyson Lewis, who was drafted by the Reds, who, by the way, is a very physically impressive looking guy. Little too swing happy. He's got great bat speed, but he was swinging through high fastballs yesterday. I was like, how has this been in dealing with this heat? And he's like, oh my, I have never experienced anything like this. And then Peyton Stovall, who was over at Arkansas, I was like, how different is this? And he's like, I don't even know what to do with, like, all of these guys are just the experience of adjusting. So that's another thing to think about too, with these draft guys, is like the adjusting to just weather is something they've just never, can't even comprehend, like day in and day out. Tyson Lewis, this dude is out here working out, training, and then playing in games when it's 110. It's a grind for these guys, but it also, it's like, it shows you what a lot of these guys are made of at these levels.
Yeah. I had a side note, the first I've ever seen at a game where we get to the seventh inning and the behind the plate umpire between pitches, like, nearly passes out.
Oh, wow.
He's dehydrated. So, like, it was like a 20-minute pause, and then they take him out of the game. So they run one in high A, for some reason, they run two umpires, which is really stupid to begin with. So we had one umpire. So they had to switch gear, the in-the-field umpires, to get the sweaty, dehydrated guy's gear and put it on and go behind the plate. And so for three innings, it was literally one umpire. It was so crazy. I've never seen it. But yeah, they were like getting him cold towels, and like, he's like chugging Gatorade. They were getting him like cup after cup, and they just had to walk him off the field. It was bizarre. I've never seen anything like it.
This is why I love that I live in Maine. I don't got to deal with all this. Like, when I was playing ball in high school, we get those end of the season games, we're getting into June, and I'd be bitching, it'd be 90 degrees. I'm like, I can't deal with 110. No freaking way am I out there in freaking pants and a full uniform in 110. That's just not going to happen for me. I'm a cold weather kid. I've lived in Maine my entire life, and it gets to be like negative 10 here, and like, we deal with it. I can't deal with 110.
No. We deal with it too. I'm out here. I'm trying to work out lately, and I'm running, and it was like 100 degrees. Actually, I almost passed out the other day. First time that's ever happened. But running in the 100-degree weather, it's something. I'm trying to train for when you guys are out here. I want us to do an activity. By the way, we can actually get to the show here in a second. But I want us to do like a prospect training session where like we all go take BP somewhere. Maybe we go to D-bat or we do pitching. I'm afraid to do the pitching because I feel like we're gonna blow out our arms or something.
Oh, but probably.
I feel like we should all do like a hitting session together.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't throw. I've already got a partially torn rotator cuff, but I would definitely hit.
Okay, let's do it. Let's plan for it.
Yeah. All of a sudden, like, half the prospect community has UCL surgery. We have all Tommy John surgery. We can't even write now. One arm, but
rumors. There's one person that's like, I heard a rumor that Chris Clegg might be down for a little bit. UCL issue. Like, oh, no. You and Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah.
Oh, Ricky
Tiedemann. I hope I don't get to his level of arm and shoulder issues, man.
So, way to make me sad before we even get into the show. I love me some Tiedemann, but
I know.
Yeah, you want to get to the show now? We do have a show here. We are going over the recent ADP mocks that Mr. Welsh put on here. There was, how many leagues were there? Five, right?
Yeah, I do five. Usually the basic concept is to create a ADP. I've been doing these for I want to say this is like my fourth or fifth year of the 2001, 2020, somewhere around there. I've been doing these, maybe 19, I don't know. But the basic concept is just to create like a version of a prospect ADP. Of course, it's not perfect, by just doing as many drafts and having the averages out. The macro step to this is trying to do this somewhere. I did it 1 year. I did it four times in a year. And boy, I don't think that was a good idea, because I think there was like a fatigue that happened. I felt like it really lagged like in the middle of the year. So my new goal is three times a year is what I'm going for. The reason I'm telling you all this is because how I vision it is what we just did was part one, because we're getting out of graduation territory for the most part. We now have the drafted guys. So the idea for me would be like, this is level one. We probably do another one in 2 or 3 months. And then we do one before the season starts. And that these are the steps all before the season goes. So it's to create an ADP. There's five. Again, if we do that, then I could have maybe around 15 drafts worth of data that we can get that's spread out over time. It's like AFL, there's going to be some guys we're going to see that we're going to love, end of season data stuff, injuries, whatever it is, like these things change. This last time, there's way too much of a separation between what I did in December and here. So it's a little bit like wonkier. It's great to look at what we just did to, as some people have said, it's a good scope of the public perception of what prospects look like. If anything else, like ADP might even not be the right word anymore, but it's a public perception instead of like some diehard rank list that like we make.
Yeah. It's a nice little, it's a little different, but yeah, I think it gives that extra perspective. And yeah, you mentioned it's always changing different times of the year. We see different value changes up and down, like you said, injuries, AFL, different performances. So I always love doing these. I always love seeing how they turn out. And if anyone wants to see the entire, what you do, an entire top 200, I believe it was, you can go check that over on Welsh's Patreon. That's patreon.com/ITL Army. If you want to get all of that, plus all of the other great rankings and everything else Welsh has going on over there. A lot of good stuff.
InThisLeague.com is an easy one too, by the way. You can just do that and it'll take you straight there instead of doing the whole slash Patreon stuff. But I appreciate that cheap plug.
Yeah, easy. Yeah, much easier. InThisLeague.com brings you right over to all of that. Let's get into the top of the list. We're not going to give away the entire list. I'm not going to sit here and list off the ADP of 200 guys, but we'll talk about the top guys. We'll talk about where some of the FYPD guys fall in, some risers, fallers, surprises, whatever else we decide to come up with along the way. We start off with, let's start with the top 15 here. And number one guy just graduated, but he was still eligible when we were doing this. That was James Wood. Jackson Holiday, Junior Caminero, Jason Dominguez, and Kobe Mayo round out the top five. Walker Jenkins, Roman Anthony, Dylan Cruz, Jackson Jobe, and Travis Bazana are 6 through 10. And then 11 through 15, we got Charlie Condon, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Jordan Lawler, Max Clark, and Samuel Basayo at 15 there. What are your thoughts of that top 15? Welsh, any surprises in there?
Yeah, I mean, it's roughly pretty chalky. I don't have Lawler in the top 15 anymore, which might surprise some people. So that wasn't for me. Xavier Isaac not making it was standout. There were some anomalies. I did an episode, if you guys want to check it out too, on my show Prospect One, where it was full episode breaking all of this down. And one of the, there were a couple players, and what I mean by anomaly, you'll get it, is Leo DeVries went 5 in one of these leagues. And that's, by the way, why we do so many of them, to help the variance of what crazy can happen in one specific league. But like, I knew going into this that guys like Walcott and DeVries and Felon Silston, those three would be higher than people expect, because you're treating this kind of like a fresh draft and the start over. But, you know, DeVries was a shock. So I'm giving you that answer to say that was probably one of the biggest shocks of him going 5 overall in a league, was really an eye opener. But from what the top 15 looks like, for the most part, like I said, it is chalk. Maybe it's a little bit, there are things that might be skewed to me a tiny bit more, which is totally understandable. It's a lot of the awesome dynasty drafters that fill it are on my Patreon and stuff. So like Bazana over Condon is has obviously been not an industry standard. There's a few of us Bazanas out there. I'm a Bazana guy. So I think that might have skewed a tiny bit towards me. And I think there's just some other questions, but like surprise, you know, from like the difference to my rank Roman Anthony, I just haven't, I'm just not like top five Roman Anthony. I had this long conversation in the last show as well on Prospect One with Tim Kanak, where we were discussing the uncomfortable nature people are having with what's going to happen to prospect lists after this top four or five are graduated. It was something that started jumping up in my Prospect One GroupMe rooms, is that people are like, hey, I'm cool with Holiday, I'm cool with Caminero, but when all these guys are gone, you're going to start defaulting into Walker Jenkins is going to be a one, or Roman Anthony. Like, I can't wrap my head around. I don't want to be a hater about Walker Jenkins, Roman Anthony, Max Clark, any of those guys, but I can't wrap my head around those are going to be the guys that are going to default into that top space. And it's this bigger question we debated on the show about the state of prospects and stuff like that. But I don't know. I guess I didn't expect Roman Anthony to be seven. I didn't expect Jordan Lawler to be in there. And I thought Max Clark was a little bit low. What can you really take out of the top 15? You guys tell me what was like a surprise to you. But if I had to pick, those were like a couple of them.
I saw Roman Anthony at seven, and he was top 10 in all five. He was ninth in three and seventh in the other two.
Unanimous. And I'm, again, like, dude's age to level. He's awesome. The doubles came right out of AAA and stuff like that. But just, it's like that crop, these crop of guys that are being put, like, to think that Walker Jenkins and Clark and Bazan, like, those are going to be your top five. That's like, it's very eye-opening to me. So sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, I was saying that the other day too, where once all these top guys, obviously we've lost Wood, we've obviously lost like Langford and others earlier in the season. Yeah, and now we're gonna lose Jackson Holiday by the end of the year, probably Caminero, Mayo. He's not playing that much. Maybe Mayo stays on the list, but yeah, it's gonna be weird. Where, you know, for the last couple of years, like, I've had, like, every time someone graduates, I've had an idea. Like, all right, this is my new number one. I don't have that right now. I don't know who it's going to be. I like Walker Jenkins a lot. I like Roman Anthony a lot. Do I think they're number one right now? No, I don't. But it might be someone who has to be number one by default, because there's nobody, all these other guys, Holiday and Caminero and everyone, are off the list. But yeah, this was, I wasn't overly surprised. Jordan Lawler, he's so hard to rank. Like, obviously top 10 talent, but can't stay healthy anymore. So it's like, where do you rank him? I had a feeling Bazan and Condon would be top 10-ish. And they're right there at 10 and 11. Yeah, it was pretty unsurprising, top of the list there. But
unsurprising, Clegg, in like that, that's what it was, by the way. And I want to throw this to you, because I'm dying to hear what Clegg has to say on this too. The one guy that I said that I thought was, I was surprised he was a little bit lower, that I think might be the guy that I settle in. I think what we're all going to have to do, like, I'm like us, and like the rhetorical, also the industry, is like, when the season's done and Caminero's off the list and Holiday's off the list, and I don't know, I like it if like Jason and Mayo got off the list, like, let's just get them all off. So we're not messing around here. Let's just get them all gone.
Clean slate.
But we are going to sit and have to, like, I think, reanalyze. And I think, and this is what something I was guessing about, is I think we could have this big shift on what rank lists are going to look like, because I think we're all going to have to stare at our list and be like, are we really comfortable with just letting the next cog in the machine move up? And we might want to really relook at all of them. And under that concept, I think Max Clark might be a guy that I might throw at the number one spot. I'm not 100% sold on it yet. You look at the way he's making contact, the power coming in the back half of the year, the elite stolen bases. Like, he exemplifies to me that, you know, the good version of the Corbin Carroll type of guy with its 40 stolen bases, double digit power. He's going to keep developing power. If I have one, when I go through my reanalysis of them, like, Dylan Cruz would be my default guy, but like Clark, Cruz, Jenkins, like, I want to compare them up, but I feel like Clark could be one of those guys when we start to go back and look and we think from the fantasy perspective, he could maybe default back in there. But sorry, I took it again, Clegg. I'd love to know what you think about that with Max Clark, and then obviously what you thought maybe was weird about the top 15.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think it was pretty chalk for the most part. Like the names you expect to be there would. And yeah, I think that a lot of people still hold out hope for Jordan Lawler because we've seen the upside in talent. And I guess in a weaker prospect class, like I feel like this top 100 as it stands is like the weakest that I can ever remember, just because we're seeing guys graduate so much quicker now. I also think the talent level in minor league baseball is not nearly as good as it once was. Just watching the lower levels, I think that's pretty clear to me. Lawler, I think people are holding out hope that he does bounce back and can get to the upside. I'm not there on Lawler anymore. He's 40 range for me. I'm just concerned about several aspects of his game. Yeah, that's really the big one, but I think it's pretty chalky for the most part, names that I would expect to be that high. I also think in like the mock setting, you have some people that are willing to take the upside, like a Leo DeVries that high. It's like the sexy kind of pick. You're like, okay, like I chase the upside, and you can do that without any kind of repercussion. Like if it's a real league and you draft all upside and you miss on 8 out of 10, then there's repercussions. But in a mock, it looks pretty good. So I can certainly see that angle of taking Leo DeVries that high, especially if you believe he's not coming back to you in the second round and you really want him. It's not surprising to see him that high.
Man, the person that did that is someone that would have done that. I know the person there in our ITL army, they're an international guy. And I think that's what's an interesting like span of all of this is sometimes you play in dynasty leagues where people are like heavy, hardcore international. I play in with, you guys know, Jesse Sevier helped man a lot of this stuff, and he hosts the Dynasty Sports Life show. And I have been playing in leagues with Jesse for a long time. He is a guy, whenever I'm in a rookie draft, he's going to take the international guys. He's going to put them over more established first-year player college guys. He's going to bump them up knowing to get them. So it is a representation of what happens. But that's also, again, that's why we do the multiple of those leagues. But again, it's chalk with these weird few variants. I think like Andrew Painter went really high in another one again. But what did you think about the idea of Max Clark maybe being a number one?
Yeah, I think Clark is extremely talented and impressive. Getting to see him in the spring, and then he unfortunately shipped out to high A like right before, I think it was his first series in high A was like the week I was in Florida, so I missed him, which sucked, but I did see him this spring, which was encouraging. There's a lot to, and Eric and I interviewed him back when he was a junior in high school, and the baseball IQ was insane. I think that he's still one of the better interviews that we've ever done, and that was a 16-year-old. Like, he just totally talked about the game was so different than anybody else. I think that Clark does a lot of things extremely well. The bat to ball skills have easily been plus or better. He can hit the ball hard. He's certainly got the speed. My biggest question is, can he lift it enough? The swing's geared for more on the ground, and I think that's the biggest deterrent I have right now. And I still think he's an extremely talented prospect. For a number one overall prospect, like, I want to see him be able to lift and get to home runs, but his air percentage is not the best right now. If that, it's a little tweak away, though. It's very close for him getting to that game power, which I think would be really encouraging. But it's, you look at the list and say, who else? Because you're looking at my list, Roman Anthony's the default next one. If Holiday, Caminero, Mayo all graduate, it's Anthony by default, because Wood's off the list now, he graduated. But I look at it and say, who has really made their argument loud and clear they should be the number one prospect? And I literally can't speak to any of them.
It's none of them.
No, it's not. Like, there's some that have done it a little bit here and there, but there's always like that one missing piece for like every one of these guys. With Clark, it's the game power. Like, obviously, contact skills are there. He's a phenomenal athlete. He's got everything going for him. And he's got that raw power. But if I project him as like a 15 homer guy, do I feel comfortable putting that as my number one? I love Clark, and like Chris mentioned, our interview with him was phenomenal. Like, hard worker, he has his head on straight, he knows the game, like all those intangibles that you just don't see in a box score. But yeah, it's like none of these guys like check off, you look at like a check off the boxes for our number one prospect. Like, none of these other guys that are the next wave, so to speak, check off every single box. Like, I freaking love Charlie Condon. He doesn't steal bags, you know. It's like every prospect is missing one little thing, but someone has to be one. For me, is it gonna be maybe one of the two FIPD guys? Is it going to be Condon and Brezana? Maybe Anthony's close. DeVries could be. Is he there yet? Probably not. So yeah, there's a lot of questions here that, and maybe we get some of these answered over the next month or so. Hope for so. the But she's, yeah, I really hope so. That would really help this offseason. But yeah, it's going to be a really interesting offseason trying to formulate these lists. And
Cross, who would your default be? Who would your default be right now? Just tell me who the default is. It's not that I don't actually care, but I want to test something.
It's probably for me Jenkins right now.
Okay, perfect. So this is something I said on the show the other day too. I was like, if you take 10 prospect people that do list, and there's 1,200 now, if you take 10, I'll bet you will probably get 6 different answers who the number one is. And that seems crazy, but I have Dylan Cruz would be my default.
Yeah.
Clegg just said Roman Anthony. You said Walker Jenkins. If I'm being fair, I think that's the crew, but I would not be shocked if you heard Max Clark, if you heard Charlie Condon, if you heard Bazana. I guess the others, I would be a little bit more surprised if somebody jumped in with a Basayo. I think Tim Kanak told me his default would be Basayo. So it's like between the four right there, that's 4 different players.
Yeah,
that's the oddity. And that's where I think there's going to be a lot of reevaluation instead of, I think we're all uncomfortable with just letting the default go back right up, where I think it's actually a good thing where we all are going to be able to put that extra concerted effort in the off season to really go back and relook and reorganize. So that's why I was saying the funny thing enough is like, I think whatever, like even my P180P or Clegg's list or my list or Cross's list looks like, I don't be surprised when you see some big puzzle reorienting in November or October right, or something like that, when we all just do this deep dive, because I just, as you guys are reiterating as well, I don't think any of us are super comfortable just letting the pegs fall where they have to as graduations happen.
Yeah. What do you think about Jason Dominguez slotting in? I think he's made one of the clearest arguments that he's come up to the majors and performed. Obviously, health has been totally against him this year, and he would have easily graduated at this point. But assuming that he stays on list, he may be one I look at and say he's probably the most deserving of any of those guys.
My default. No, everything I've told you is the assumption that he is off the list.
Yeah.
Now, I know the Yankees have said he's not. If he's on the list, hands down number one, and I think it's a clear tier change. That was my big point, was like, Kemp, if I'm being fair, if I was tiering them, Caminero, Holiday, and Dominguez to me are a tier. Then there's this 1B that's like Kobe Mayo. Strikeouts in the majors have been a problem and stuff, but we don't want to freak out. And then that's where you get into this default order of these guys falling in. If Dominguez is still there, he will be my number one. And there's a decent chance with how the Yankees have talked about, we will go into next season and all of this is, it won't be for naught, but it'll, like, Jason Dominguez to me would be my safe barrier of, there's my number one guy, clear cut number one guy. And then I'll build around him. And I still, no matter what I do, I've come to the realization I'm going to do a big, deep overhaul of the top 20, 30, massive analysis. I might even make a YouTube like little series out of it, relooking to reorganize what these guys look like. But yeah, Dominguez would definitely be the guy.
And it really does sound like he's going to be there on that list this offseason. Like, we all thought he'd come back, and he was raking at the beginning. Then he went out on injury again. But then, you know, Verdugo is actually starting to hit somewhat okay lately. He was terrible. And then we thought Jason will take that spot. But Verdugo's heated up a little bit. And Dominguez is actually struggling right now. I think he's hitting like .150 over the last 2 weeks or whatever it is down in AAA. So if he's going to graduate, he only had, 30-ish plate appearances last year. So he's going to need to come up within the next couple of weeks here if he's going to, and then play regularly if he's going to be off the list by the end of the year. So yeah, I think Dominguez stays on, and obviously power runs a good amount as well. So maybe if he stays on, he's probably the number one for sure.
Maybe we see him back in the AFL. That would be amazing. Yeah. He missed a lot of time this year. Maybe he comes back to the AFL.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out. That'd be pretty fun. But let's move over to some of the FYPD guys here, see where they fell on the list. We already mentioned that Bazana and Condon were 10 and 11 in the ranking order, with ADPs right around 11. Then you get a little bit of a gap, almost 20 picks down to another back-to-back duo here. JJ Weatherholt, ADP right around 30. And then same with Jack Caglione right behind him. And then you get a little bit more of a drop here. Then you got Chase Burns at 43. You got even more of a drop here. These guys fell a little bit lower than I thought they were. Is usually they're the shiny new toy in the room. You got Hagen Smith down in the 60s. You got Nick Kurtz in the 60s as well. Connor Griffin and Braden Montgomery, both right past pick 70. So I think that was like 8 or 9 names or so. Were you surprised that some of these, we knew Bazana and Condon were going to go super high, but were you surprised that a lot of these other, the top FYPD guys slid a little bit in these drafts?
To be fair, like maybe some of my talk might have influenced some of it as well. But also at the same point, like this was the narrative a lot of us were talking about, that it's like, this wasn't a great draft. I'm not saying it's bad and it might end up being really good. I'll tell you, I was going through my first year play, I do my big rank overhaul, my monthly rank update. And I was like, I was moving a guy, I had moved someone really up, and I looked and what, just this is just like an eye thing, from an eye perspective, I was like, oh, this is a guy that I'd usually have in like the 40s or 50s, and he was like in the 30s, and I was like, god man, like the tiers of how these guys jump off of, at least of what we know right now, it feels pretty dramatic. And by that tone, I think there's really cool talent. I think Bryce Rainer, I want to say, was number 10 maybe on the list of first year player, maybe it was 8. I love Bryce Rainer this year. But the level of love for any of these guys, it's minimal. Like it's like Bazana and Condon, and then there is a big gap. Caglione, Weatherholt, and I think Chase Burns occupy a space. And then I think, again, it's another big tier gap. So if people want to go with more proven talent, I don't think there's a problem with it. I think there's a lot of talent that had some underperforming of the year, that Tamar Johnson actually ended up having a pretty high ADP in this, which that wasn't due to me. I love Tamar Johnson. Don't get me wrong. I huge L on my forehead for how he's turned out, but he's not anywhere close in my ranks to where he went. I think there are some people that might be a little bit more comfortable with the monster they know instead of the monster they don't know. And it's like Braden Montgomery had some swing and miss issues. Connor Griffin, there's some serious power questions. Obviously, he was a big speed guy. Like the high school bats don't feel like they did. Like Bryce Rainer and Connor Griffin are not remotely close to Walker Jenkins and Max Clark. And then right. We also saw a downtick in the college talent that I just like, as much as I think people are going to behind the scenes be like, who I really love, Nick Kurtz. You're still not going to, like, how high are you going to go on him? There's big power and he's a big OBP, got 28% college walk rate, which was awesome. But you're starting to compare them against Robert Kalaz should be on a rocket ship to people. Everybody's freaking out about Sebastian Walcott and Leo DeVries. Maybe I'm biased because I saw a ton of Kalaz, but Kalaz absolutely destroyed complex out here. And then he's been shipped up and he's doing it again at A ball. Like he's still going. Like Kalaz went in the 50s. I have him ranked much higher. I'm saying all that to say I'm not surprised, because I just don't think the talent pool warranted people going bonkers just because they are the new toy. I think people might be a little bit more insightful now, realizing they don't have to way massively bump up all these new drafted players.
I wonder if you did this again, like right now, how much higher Christian Moore would have gone after the little binge he went on to start his career.
Yeah, dude. I had Christian Moore higher too. This is another one of those. I'm actually happy to see when things don't like mimic how I feel about it. I had Christian Moore higher on my own personal ranks than he actually went. And it was like, duh, as soon as he got drafted by the Angels. Yeah, it sounds like it's he's going to get called up. Yeah, of course he is. He's already a AA. He'd be a triple A probably in a week. Like it's exactly what they do, but the guy can also hit and he can run and there's a lot there. Yes, I agree with you. I think he would be up. And I think if you did this every single week, it would be just some ridiculous looking stock market tracker where it's like Bazana's up, now Condon's up, Weatherholt's up, no, it's Caglione, and then all the pitchers would start dropping. I just saw Chase Burns. I was walking right next to him yesterday, but he's not going to pitch. He's not going to do anything out here. I've talked to Drew Beam, who got drafted by the Royals. He's not pitching. A lot of these college pitchers are not going to do anything, so that's going to boost down their value. And that's why I also say Chase Burns belongs in that upper territory as well, because I think people are going to forget about him, because he's going to be, maybe they won't like when it, if your first year player drafts are like in December or January and everything is even space, but if you do it, let's say right after the season, I think some of those pitchers you're going to get better values on because they're out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, no, that's fair for sure. Clegg, what are your thoughts on where some of these FYPD guys fell?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the out of sight, out of mind thing is pretty good, because there's going to be major overreactions to the draftees and how they perform. So, you know, it's right now it's Christian Moore on the rocket ship, and I like Moore. I like you know, the baseball skills. I think you could put him up there with any player in this draft, honestly. It's just, I have some concerns about some other things, behind the scene things, but at the end of the day, the talent is there. But on the flip side, guy comes and struggles, then they're going to get docked really quick. Oh, he can't hit with a wood bat. He's a college hitter, blah, 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 blah. And people will make up all these things. And so the narrative will then be, this player is not as good. So it will create some good values for those players. And you know, again, player doesn't play. You have a Chase Burns who doesn't pitch. Let's say he pitched even like one game and he allowed a couple home runs. Oh man, the home run problem at Wake Forest is going to be a huge problem in pro ball kind of thing. And it drives his value down, but his value may be driven down by the fact that he just doesn't even play. It's interesting. Again, this draft is, I feel like the top 10 is pretty chalk. Well, I'll say chalk, but pretty good. That grouping up there,
like,
you know,
solid talent.
Yeah. So the majority of people are going to have the same names at the top, how you order them, all different. Personally, I'm very in on Nick Kurtz. I think that he's really the undervalued one, and I think that he's going to be the good value in FYPD because he does everything that you want. The biggest question is health. He's missed a little bit of time, multiple years, but he literally checks every box. Like, he's an outlier athlete at first base. He hits the ball as hard as anybody in the class. He makes as much contact as nearly anybody. The problem is he walked like a 30% clip this year, which is just stupid, and it's too high.
28%. Yeah. It was the mind-boggling. I think the next dude was like 8% difference or something like that when I was looking at some of the data. It's crazy.
Yeah, too high almost. Like, swing the bat a little bit. But he's already shown he can hit with a wood bat. He homered. I think it was a 110 plus EV.
But what does that mean to you with Kurtz? Like, when you say, like, he's one of the best values. So, like, you're saying all that. So, like, where do you have him in first-year player?
I've got him at number 4 right now.
Okay. So yeah, that's significant enough. Do you have him over Cags or Weatherholt?
Over Cags, yeah. I've got Weatherholt at 3, so okay. Got him over Cags. Yeah, Cags' upside is certainly fun to dream on. I think that he's the power upside. 40 home runs, like, regularly could be a thing there, but I just have major concerns about the contact and how he expands his own. And I know he made contact gains last year, but in college, but it's a different game, man. And I really do think that
scoreboard.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see. He's shown some whiff against breakers already against pro ball. I know he's put up some pretty gaudy exit velocities and big home runs too. So it's the excitement of Caglione. And I think that he's certainly that guy that you can dream on that could be the best player in the class when all is said and done. But right now, it's such a small sample. We're not forming any opinions on this, but I do have, and I've had concerns about his expansion of the zone, the chase, and it's a different game. I know he played in the SEC, but still, you step in the high A, totally different ball game.
To that, I don't know if you saw it, but I got to see Cags out here. He did the bridge league before he went up to A ball, and I got to watch him. And there are just so many fascinating things about it, because physically, Caglione is one of the most impressive players in this draft. Maybe the most impressive player, if we're really truly being honest. But in his first at bat in this bridge league, it was such a weird thing too, because you had Blake Burke, Tennessee, he was playing in it. Braylon Payne was in it. And as Cags gets up to bat, he makes one of the worst swings you've ever seen. I got it on video. I haven't shared it. I probably should. It's horrific. It, like, absolutely fooled. And that was a reminder. I was like, oh yeah, you know, this guy. And then someone in the Brewers dugout, I don't know who it was, screams, this is not the SEC anymore. And that's this, like, kind of implied thing of, like, maybe SEC teams maybe knowing some of the pitch stuff. There's these rumors that have been out there for a long time about guys maybe knowing what's coming and stuff like that. And that's what they were doing. And then there's, like, another really bad swing, and then he pulled it opposite field. But I've been sitting on that because I think there's a really tough battle. And I actually think Kurtz and Cags are, like, perfect opposite, complete yin and yang of players to think on, because Cags has got just absolutely unreal power, the most unreal power. And I think physically is the most impressive. And I could really see him being like another Matt Olson type of player if it works out. But I don't know if he'll ever be able to hit spin, or he's going to be able to pitch sequence stuff, where Kurtz is, like, he's already like an advanced hitter. Like, his eye, the walk rate and stuff like that, it's phenomenal. Good average, great exit velocity, great power, like you said. But it's just like, is it going to amount to him being a star, or is it going to amount to him being like a cool player?
Yeah.
And that's always the difference, because there's something about CAG's game and what we've seen in college where it's like there's a superstar level to that. And the question is Kurt's stuff going to be enough to be a superstar? And you could argue, like, with what the A's have done, yeah, this might be like Kurt, he might be like the perfect molded player and stuff like that. But like, is he just like a younger Brent Rooker, which is awesome? And is Jack the next Matt Olson, or is Kurt's going to end up just being like an Austin Riley type of player with a better OBP or whatever? And is Jack going to just end up being a Joey Gallo? Like, the upside and the floor, like, really difficult things to deal with both those. I just thought it was an interesting back and forth of those two.
And I think it depends on how you like to draft too. It's just personal preference of, and I think at the end of the day, what we can say is that nobody's safe. Like, I looked back the other day at the top college hitters taken since like 2019, maybe even 2018. And it's pretty ugly. The success rate of like college bats in the top 15 is not good at all. So it's interesting. Everybody's like, oh, the prep demographic's so risky, but it almost seems like the college demographic's been just as risky over the last five or so years. And nobody's really safe. We thought that we can name off anybody. This player was a really safe bet. And then Jacob Berry, like, he was incredible field of hit. Spencer Torkelson. We can go down the list of top 10 draftees that were supposed to be safe bats and just hadn't panned out. So it is pretty interesting to think about. I do feel like Kurtz provides that safety, but again, we just don't know how it's going to translate. It's so hard. It's such a different ball game. And I really think the disparity now between Major League Baseball and even AAA, AA is the largest that it's ever been.
Yeah, no, I think it really is. And I was pulling up the 2020 draft. I was looking at, so that was the year Torkelson was there. Like, Torkelson went one. Obviously, he's had his struggles at AAA right now. Kierstad, still wait and see on him. Austin Martin, kind of meh.
Yeah.
Nick Gonzalez has not been good. And you scroll down some of the high school bats, like Robert Hassel, Zach Veen, Austin Hendrick, didn't work out. Patrick Bailey, he's been okay. No, I don't think anyone thought he'd be a star anyway. Justin Foscue is still chilling in the high minors for Texas. Then you get Ed Howard, Nick York, all these guys just didn't work out. Garrett Mitchell, Jordan Walker. Yeah, so it's been, that's just one draft class, one example of kind of what Chris Clegg was talking about. Make sure I specify which Chris right now, but what Clegg was talking about. And yeah, it's like with Caglione, like, he has the higher upside for sure. Yeah, I think that Matt Olson comp is really good. This guy could be 40 home runs. But he also could be guys hitting under 200 and just can't make enough contact to really tap into that power full time, or at least it'll limit him. Kurtz definitely has a higher floor. So you like the higher floor, you like the more upside. Lately, obviously, we all love the upside. I don't think anyone out there will say they don't like the upside, but I'm starting to lean more towards like the Nick Kurtz type guy, because I feel safer about him. Maybe he won't be a stud, but I feel safer about him being impact, like a good major league bats, and maybe he doesn't quite have the upside of a Jack Caglione. I think he has the gap is bigger between his floor and Jack's floor than the two gaps in terms of the ceiling, I think. So now I'm wondering, do I want to rank Nick Kurtz over Jack Caglione? I have Caglione, I think, five and Kurtz six right now in my own rankings, but maybe I'll look to flip-flop that. But all right, let's move over to some risers and fallers here. I'll start with some of the fallers. I was looking at some of these players that were taken inside the top 50 back in December and some of the bigger followers since then. So guys that were drafted inside the top 50 then, that had at least a 50 spot drop to this one. You got almost Tyler Black. He was 50th, dropped ADP 48.2 down to 98.2. You had Ricky Tiedemann, who had an ADP of 31. Now it's 85. Adiel Amador, also 31. Now it's 88. Drew Gilbert was 43. Now it's 129. And Ronnie Mauricio was 32. Now it's 128. Robbie Snelling, 40. Now it's 140. And Ethan Salas, almost had a 50 spot drop, was 19.8 in December. Now 64.2. What are your thoughts on some of those? Obviously, some of those were injury-related, but some performance-related, too. Any thoughts along all of those guys that fell a lot?
Yeah, there were a couple of those guys I was not into. I was never a Tyler Black guy. I was never as big of a Adele Amador guy as some others. but I was a big Ethan Salas guy. And that was a dramatic drop off because I was pounding the table after he signed in J15, and that was right. And then we kept going, and his regression level of the bat, it's pretty astonishing. And the surprise, though, is I have him a ton lower than he went. Like,
me too.
Like, I'm more cautious about moves that I make, I think, than most. Maybe not, but that's a presumptuous thing I'm putting on myself. I feel like I hold off, especially with decimating a player's value. I feel like I try to be a little bit more cautious than anybody else. But Salas, I don't know, man. Like, the bat regressed so hard. He is a catch. I still think, and hold back to the OG side of it, like, he's a great defensive catcher. Athletically, he's really impressive. But it was also like, he was so advanced for his age. He got pushed really hard, but the bat has taken such a, like, it's backtracked so hard that I think a catcher of that style, as much as I want to bet on talent and him being able to bounce back, I find it hard to even justify him getting in the top 100. And like, I got him right in that range and he went near the 50. So that was like a disagreement. All the other things I thought just made sense and it's whatever. But the Salas one also tells you from a public perception standpoint that public is not ready to give up on Ethan Salas. And that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, I actually think one of the worst things you can do is have those high evaluations and just completely give up and just sell for nothing. People get just very ornery and they're just like, oh, I'll just get whatever I can get. And it's just like, it's cliche, but it's not linear, man. Like, the path has ups and downs, and this is what development and learning is. And Brent Rooker's using him again, dude's 30 homers and he's 30 years old. It's taken, he was a more highly touted prospect, but still maybe not the best example, but it's just like, there are ups and downs in the process. I love the idea of not selling low on prospects, but even here, I'm just quite a bit lower and the public was not with it. And they are still valuing him in a top 50 cent. So if you are a seller, that actually might be a decent opportunity. And one that I just kick myself for being so late to the game, but happens. We all get it. We're late to the game on guys and whatever, but Christian Campbell is definitely somebody that in my ranks needed way more love and was right in the top 60 range here. If you could go trade Salas for Campbell, probably can't, but just hypothetically talking about the upside of where people are still viewing Salas to maybe not buying fully in on a Christian Campbell, that's something I would do. And that's something that this thing is telling you, that the P1 ADP is telling you, that it's not out of hand to do something like that. Like, that's the level I'm at with Salas. So I guess how he dropped, the more surprises that he didn't drop further.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. So I have him ranked around 125 right now. And I was one of the lower people on him, even back when everything was peak around this time last year. So I was actually surprised that he still went, you know, inside the top 60 or close to it, whatever it was, right around 60. But I would trade two of him for one of Christian Campbell right now. That's where I'm at. But
you like the old burger. I'll take two burgers. By the way, he didn't go lower than 76, and he was drafted by three industry people. Just want to point that out. So as much as we're talking about that, three of the five picks of Ethan Salas were by industry drafters. So that makes it even more interesting. The high was inside the top 50 by Nate Handy.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. There's still a lot of love out there. And I see, I'm not saying, even when I was trying to yell to pump the brakes on his ranking, like, I wasn't saying he was bad by any means. Like, you see, like you mentioned, these people have said he's ready to catch defensively in the majors today. Like, that is high praise. And he's a great athlete. If the bat comes back around, he's going to be a pretty good player for a long time. I never disputed that, but I saw some of the rankings on him, like the ADP on him last year being like 19 point, whatever it was. That was just crazy to me. But, you know, it's, a lot of the other ones I'm not surprised by. Obviously, Amador, outside of him going absolutely bonkers here in Portland for eight games or whatever it was, he's been pretty mediocre this year. You know, obviously, Mauricio was hurt. One of the other big fallers that I see the gripe about real quick, Marco Luciano. Can he freaking graduate and get off my damn list?
He did. He graduated 2 days ago. Fine.
Did he? What, it was a service daytime thing?
Yeah, it had to be. Yes, he said 90-something of that. Okay.
Guess what I'm doing right now as we speak. Happy. Hold on. I've grabbed his name. I'm dragging him down. You are
deleted
off the island. You're out of here, Marco Luciano. Thank
God. It's like a Survivor. They're putting the cap on the torch of Marco Luciano. So I was, he's been on my list for what feels like 23 years. Totally. I swear. But and it's really only what, five? I think he came on the list in 2019 or whatever it was. But man, thank God he's graduated. But
cautionary tale. Yeah.
He was a big follower in this one. Went from 68 last year to 161 this year.
Dude, Marco Luciano, I just want to point out, this is my brain. And I actually feel very lucky because I have these memories. My memory of the Complex League in 2000, I think 19, now I'm forgetting the year, but that Complex League, Bobby Witt Jr., Corbin Carroll, Luis Matos, and Marco Luciano, and I'm forgetting a few, were all in Complex. I watched them every day. Oh, CJ Abrams. All of those guys played every single day, the whole Complex level. And to think of where Bobby Witt Jr. is right now, CJ Abrams, Corbin Carroll, versus what happened with Marco Luciano, it is a wild thing to think about. Because Luciano might have been the sexiest of all the prospects at that time that was out here. And it it's always weird to see the perspective of Josh Mears was drafted the same year as CJ Abrams. CJ Abrams is like an accomplished major leaguer now, and Josh Mears hasn't got past like double A. It's just always such a weird thing that happens. And I have that visualization of that Complex. It will probably be the greatest Complex league I'll ever see in my lifetime. And it's like Marco Luciano was maybe the hottest name, and that dude literally just graduated. And we found out August 12th, you said 2 days ago, and Bobby Witt Jr. is looking like he's vying for an MVP.
I can't explain how happy I am that I can delete Luciano.
I was so happy when I saw that. I'm not kidding.
You made my night.
I don't know how I miss it. It's hard to always, you know, figure out the service time of these guys. But as I knew, he was like, he wasn't even at 100 at bats yet. And he was like, oh, he's still got another, at least another 10, 12 games to go. But he's been on my list for so freaking long. So I'm happy to finally get him off the list. Clegg, any thoughts on those followers from this set of mocks?
I think a lot of them are injury related, which goes to show you, I think there's value in those guys. Ronnie Mauricio, he's not any different a player today than he was, you know, last offseason. I think that the talent's still there. Drew Gilbert, same thing. I still believe in the talent levels. Can create buying opportunities, and I think that's when you pounce is when you have a guy coming back from TJ. And he's on, like, Andrew Painter. Yeah, he's still ranked high, like, on every list. But the perceived value is not there because he hasn't pitched. He's out of sight, out of mind. But those are the type of guys I think that you can certainly capitalize on, is the injured players that haven't played that really take a tumble, when in reality, how different of a prospect are they really, other than the fact they haven't played? So I think that the Salas one's interesting. There's still a lot of name value there. I totally get the reasons to like him because the skills he showed at such a young age last year were extremely impressive. And did the Padres screw him up a little bit, pushing him as fast as they did? Maybe. And it looks like they learned. They should, and at this point, have kept Leo DeVries in single A the entire year. And hopefully they leave him there, because I think there's a certain factor of finding your groove and finding confidence. And while DeVries didn't start out the year the hottest, guess what? The talent level worked itself out. He adjusted to pro ball. He's found his confidence in his swing, and now he looks like one of the best prospects in the game. And you don't want to kill that confidence by sending a kid to a level when we're talking about both these guys in with DeVries this year and Salas last year that are high school junior age. At the end of the day, I think that maybe Salas bounces back. I think he looks pretty lost right now, but there's still talent, and we've seen it. I think that one's not a shock to see the big fall at all. But yeah, the injury guys, I think it's certainly a chance to pounce on and get at a discount.
Mauricio fell way too much. Yeah, for the year, I get it, but falling almost 100 spots. He was 32 last year, 128.5 December to now. So in the last, 8 months, he's had a near 100 spot drop. I knew he would drop, but I thought it'd be like maybe in the 70s or 80s or something like that, maybe 40, 50 spot drop. But yeah, that is a huge drop. And yeah, you know, obviously there's some flaws there with him. He's extremely aggressive. I saw him a bunch, and when he was here in Double A, coming up here to Portland a little bit too, I saw that aggressiveness, but also the nice little power speed blend is there. So that was a pretty noticeable drop. Some other big droppers before we get to the risers. Mick Abel dropped 60 spots. Not surprising there. Victor Scott, Dylan Lesko, Graham Pauly, Aurelvis Martinez, Will Warren, Roderick Arias dropped about 100 spots. He's had a pretty tough year. And Gabriel Gonzalez was actually the biggest dropper, going from ADP around 54 to an ADP around 184. So 130 pick drop there for Gabriel Gonzalez. But moving over to some of the risers now, and obviously there's a lot of them here, so always a ton of big pop-up names every year. Some of these guys didn't even have ADPs back in December, talking about guys like didn't have an ADP in December. Now he has an ADP here of about 40. Jacob Olson went from no ADP to 50. Kevin McGonigal went from 191 to 49. Augustin Ramirez, Zebby Matthews, and Christian Campbell, all no ADPs, all now in the 60 to 65 range. Braden Taylor from 185 to 51. And so those are some of the big ones. Robert Kalas, 188 to around 60 as well. Rafi Velasquez, 192 to 66. So some of the top names there. Welsh, what are your thoughts on seeing some of those pretty big jumps from all these guys?
Yeah, well, I don't think you said him, but another one was Jason Chirio. And if you did,
I think I probably just glazed over him.
I may have just not heard it, but Jason Chirio was one of those. He didn't go in the last round, and he was like inside the top 75 of this one. Rightfully, maybe he was underdrafted. Another one of those guys, it's all the stolen bases. He's still learning to hit for power, walking more than he's striking out. There's something about that type of prospect, even though you set yourself up for, like, my Max Clark argument. It's so funny. Like, I had a Twitter up. I just clicked over a screen, and there was, like, Max Clark was on my video. It was like that Siri thing where you talk about whatever. You talk about drinking the Diet Mountain Dew, and then all of a sudden you have a Diet Mountain Dew ad, and you're just like, wait a minute. I didn't click on anything. I don't drink Diet Mountain Dew, by the way, but like, I literally just saw Max Clark, and then that the swing, it was a double, and he just hit across his body. And that's that Corbin Carroll type of side swing that you need to get in the air. What I'm getting at is, like, there's something about some of these type of prospects where I think I've been setting myself up a little bit for the power to be a problem, but these guys that are walking more than they're striking out, that are hitting for average, that are walking a whole lot and showing that skill set. That old baseball adage of, you know, power is the last thing to develop is something I feel like in the uncertainty, I'm willing to bet on a little bit more. And that's why I like Max Clark and I like Jason Chirio. I think Jason Chirio was like a really good pop-up one. There's plenty of great pop-up guys on here. Jacob Wilson, he's a prime example of that. And he is actually starting to lift the ball. Great contact, doesn't strike out. And he's starting to click. I don't think you would love to look back and be like, oh man, everyone was on it in December. There are just some big names that popped up, and Jason Chirio was one that stood out for sure.
Now, are there any names that is mentioned, or even another name that was a big riser that you're just like not there on? Like, you didn't see why they rose as high as they did. Any names you're just not buying at the level they got drafted at?
That's a good question. As far as not there, there is another riser that I think warrants conversation, but it's definitely not I don't buy it. I'm just trying to glance through to see if there's somebody that I don't buy. Maybe Hayden Birdsong. I see he was like really hot up there. Like, he was in the 80s and it hasn't, I don't know, really worked out so far. I'm not like the biggest on him. Let me inverse it and say the wildest one was, and I think this opened up a lot, and this is what's fun about these, and this is a semi little stat from the P180Ps that I gave on my show, was Franklin Arias was the talk of the P180Ps because he was not drafted in the previous one, and he ended up having a top 100 ADP in this. And the stat is he was one of three players that was drafted all by industry people. Every single draft, he was acquired by an industry-based person that was drafting. I loosely say it, like, lots of dynasty people, but people that write or do podcasting in the industry that I invited, he was a target for all of them, including you, Mr. Eric Cross. So that was, I think, probably the biggest eye-opener for a lot of people, and like how sneaky and maybe a little gatekeeping was in there too, because people were trying to beat each other for it. And I think it ended up being Alex Jensen who had the highest cost, but I'll also point out his variance was he went as high as 50 and as low as 148. So there's like a lot of variance in with him, and he ended up with the top 100 ADP. So that was one. It's not that I disagree with, I didn't have him in the top 100, but that was probably like, we could use the word chalk and stuff. Like, I look at everybody and I'm like, yeah, this makes sense in my world. But him and actually Teo, I didn't realize Teodo was in the top 100 as well. But Franklin Arias was like the funnest.
Yeah, I took him. I just pulled up my team here. I got him in the ninth round at 103. I actually went back-to-back Red Sox. I got Christian Campbell at 90 and then Franklin Arias at 103. And I thought he'd go higher. I know, Clegg, you were trying to get Arias in yours. I think you got sniped by, I forget who it was, but Dylan White. Okay, yes. Do you remember roughly where that was?
Dylan took him at like 73, I think.
82.
Okay.
82.
Okay, 82. All right. Dylan took him. I think I was first. So like it was coming back, like it was going that direction. So I'd picked and I had like 24 picks between me. So I was looking at him at the next turn and I didn't even realize he had gone. So I was like looking at my queue and I assumed he'd be there like at, you know, in the 90s. And he was gone. I was like, oh, of course Dylan got him. So no, like I like Arias. The buzz has been insane. I saw somebody had him as high as number 4 overall in a prospect ranking. That's interesting. Arias is a great player. He's fun, but there's some limitations here. His body's physically maxed out. He's a well below average runner, actually, clockwise, which everybody steals bases at the lower levels. And this guy's stolen 34 bases already. Like he's a speed demon kind of thing. Like, he's not going to steal bases, I don't think. And I think that the hype is going just bonkers right now. Yeah, I understand wanting to get in on the hype guy, but yeah, Arias is certainly a rocket ship, but maybe the rocket ship is going too far when we're talking about him. People are talking about him top 10. That's pretty high.
It might be. Like, I have him top 100, and that's fair. But
I've got him right around that top 100 range. I think that's fair right now. The data is really good on him. The EVs are pretty impressive for an 18-year-old. But I don't know. I'm just a little more reserved than to go all the way into even top 50. That's more aggressive than I'm willing to go right now.
He went to 50, 82, 99. I got him at 103. And then he also went to 148 to our buddy Martin Sokolsky. So
it's great value.
That's phenomenal. But yeah, as high as 50s, that's a pretty wide range, 98 pick range in just 5 drafts. That's pretty.
I think that shows notable. You. Like he, depending where you're in, he might be very acquirable if you want to get in on it. There might be places where he is overvalued. It's wide variance. Like I said, it's probably one of the more significant wide variance from the high to the low in the top 100.
Now, Clegg, same question for you on all those risers. Any general thoughts on some of those big rising names? Anyone that you're not quite there on that you thought went too high or anything like that?
Not necessarily, but I think it goes to show you that this is the thing about prospects is that being active on the waiver wire is huge because guys pop up every year. And if you're active, you can get in on them. And it's not even just necessarily young international players at the complex or DSL per se, especially on the pitching side. And think about like Quinn Matthews, Zebby Matthews, all these type of guys were not going to be drafted in this format. They weren't even considerations for most people's like top 300 to 500s, I'd say. But then they break out. Things happen. Zebby added several ticks to his fastball. Quinn Matthews bumped from 92 to 95, 96. It's just ridiculous that players make those kind of progress and jumps. And you have like Luke Kuechel. Those type of players, just being active is huge. You don't have to pay anything in a trade for him. You pick him up and you reap the reward. And that's, I think, the best prospects to win in Dynasty is that you're active. You get in on these guys. The rocket ship happens. And you flip them for major league pieces and you win. That's the best process that I like to go by in Dynasty. I rarely say any prospect's untouchable. There's no prospect really, especially in today's environment, that's even close to untouchable right now for me. I'd flip anybody in the right deal for a major league piece. But being active can certainly, you can reap the rewards and benefits of it, because we've seen it with a lot of these risers is that guys break out all the time. Just be in early and get those guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen some, obviously we all get these questions, whether it be Discord on Twitter or whatever it may be. Like, oh, should I trade this guy for this guy? And I'm like, aren't you hoping that the prospect turns into the guy you're trying to acquire now? Why not take the guy that's already doing it in the major leagues? And yeah, the other guy might turn into it and maybe a little bit more, but more often than not, that's a low percentage outcome. We've seen that so many times. Look at this year. You know, yeah, Hall is getting going now, but he struggled immensely. Langford's been meh right now, and there's been a lot of even these guys that are the more can't-miss guys are missing. And that just shows that the talent discrepancy between AAA and Major Leagues is pretty notable right now, even more than it has been, and that even the best prospects aren't a sure thing. That's just how it is.
Yeah, what you mentioned, I laughed because I thought about that's what the Marlins did exactly at the trade deadline. They were like trading away these MLB pieces, and it's like, okay, you're getting a lot of prospects, and you hope they become like a 1.5 win player. Like, you know, they got a bunch of guys, but at the end of the day, like, you're hoping that some of these guys, like Kyle Stowers, like maybe he becomes Brian De La Cruz, and like Connor Norrie, maybe he becomes like a everyday regular, like. It was just funny to me when you mentioned that, because that's exactly what MLB teams do.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're past the hour mark here. Let's wrap this puppy up. Welsh, any closing thoughts on anything at all from these mocks?
I feel like we've hit, sorry to give everybody a big there, and I did it again, is like looking through all of these. This is what I wanted. I wanted to see the variance. I wanted to see what the public perception is. I think it's a great tool to go and analyze through on like, where are people suffering? How quick are people willing to give up on a singular player? Who are the hot names? I definitely think at the end of the day, do you want to understand who the buzz is? It's Sebastian Walcott. It's Leo DeVries. It's Franklin Arias. It's Christian Campbell. Those are the big buzz guys. I think there's some lack of buzz on, I mentioned Robert Kolas. I think for how we're valuing some of these other young guys, Feldman, Selson as well, and we're not valuing Robert Kolas in that same territory, I think there's a decent buying opportunity. And I also think, as much as we've talked about the uncertainty of a lot of this, which I agree with, I think there's still some really good value to be had if you wanted to make some moves, if you wanted to get off of some of these perceived top-end picks or talent, and you can go and acquire a Cooper Pratt, who I love, who was in the 70s. I think, I'm not saying that's too low, but I think like it might be underselling. Johnny Farmello, out of sight, out of mind. He's hurt. He hasn't been playing. He was 75 in this list. Chase Dolander, he's a Colorado pitcher, but my God, dude, I think he had the number one or number two swinging strike percentage of non-Dominican Summer League pitchers so far this year. He's having a great year. And I also think it proves that like the undervalued pitching still exists, where people go and pay these high prices for pitching and prospect. You were talking about trading guys. I just can't handle when people are like, hey, I'm trading this amazing, great guy. I'm trading Mookie Betts. So he's 30 something or whatever. And I got this offer and it's centered around Jacob Mizorowski and another player. And it's like, no, like, absolutely not. Like, I'm not going to trade a top end player, even if they're older, to go get a pitching prospect. Also, using or taking on the price of a high-end pitching prospect when you saw everything you were talking about. Quinn Matthews, 85 on the ADP. Emiliano Teodo, 94. Wherever you think about David Festa, he was 97. Thomas White, 99. And you keep going down the list. Sprott, 104. There are great pitching prospects. George Klassen, everyone's weird about now when he's traded to the Angels. He was outside the top 100. So I think it shows there's lots of great pitching value. Like the Franklin Arias, the Christian Campbell, like those were some big wake-ups on some of the values. And seeing a couple of the interesting variants of DeVries going 5 overall. That one opens your eyes. You're like, whoa, okay. Condon ended up going 6 in one of the drafts. That can show you that you get into the right spot and someone's willing to pay a super high price. And again, I think it just tells you also who are those hot names, and understanding the market of who's hot and who's cold allows you to have a little extra advantage.
Yeah, the thing I love the most about these is obviously we all talk about perceived value and how that's king in dynasty leagues, but this kind of like shores up like, all right, where is the perceived value on these guys? We can think, oh, this guy's perceived value is top 50, top 100, but then, oh, maybe the guy we thought was top 50 ADP has like a 80 ADP in this. So I love just seeing where these guys actually go, and even if it's just 5 drafts, that still helps. Like, all right, this guy is going a little bit higher than I thought his perceived value was. So it kind of make that little mental notes, and maybe that creates another buying opportunity or even a selling opportunity. So definitely love doing these every few months you do them. And
well, I appreciate that you guys do it.
Yeah, it's always a blast. Clegg, any closing thoughts?
Nope, it's always a fun exercise to do, and appreciate you allowing us to do it and joining us to break it all down. It's definitely a good time tonight.
Yeah,
I should go back and pull together like every player we've ever drafted, and that would be a great list to do because I've got all the data. I should go back. I'm going to do that as an experiment when I have 4 seconds of time. That I'm going to go and see every player that we've ever drafted, and that we can have an episode where we just pick apart some of the embarrassing guys that we've taken over time.
Oh, that'll be fun. There'll be some good ones and some really bad ones, I'm sure. Yeah. Before we hop out of here, Welsh, anything you want to plug that you got going on?
You guys can just check out my show, ProspectOneInThisLeague.com is a Patreon. I'm working on my rank update, which should be out in a couple days here, as well as my Dynasty update. And Prospect One is the show that I do, and you can catch me on Fantasy Pros. That's where I work, Fantasy Pros. On the MLB side, I host Leading Off Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now. We're off of 5 days a week just for a little bit of the season, but going to be doing some Dynasty content in the off season. So find me on Fantasy Pros, find me on the Patreon, and of course, at Is It the Welsh, if you want to follow me on Twitter.
And if you listen to this show and aren't following Welsh for some reason, I got no words for you.
They don't like me. Then they're committed to not liking me at that point, which is okay.
No, it is not okay. I will fight anyone that does not like our good buddy Chris Welsh. Chris, again, thank you so much for joining us. Always a blast breaking these down. We will see you in a few months, buddy. It's coming right up.
Oh, I'm looking so forward to it. Looking to see and do a podcast with you guys in the very near future in person.
And hopefully we get another foul ball. Maybe that'll become a tradition there. But yeah, thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. And we will be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.